You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, despite his recent absences, we have the double-header Dream Team edition with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, back from his escapades in the Antipodes, and of course the ever-present Viv Govender from Rand Swift, both in Johannesburg. David, welcome back. I have to start with you. Have you come back refreshed with new ideas and new conquests, or are you just flat and jet-lagged?
No, I'm quite keen on the markets. I'm quite happy with how things have transpired. I must say the one thing about being in Australia is that you're 8 hours ahead.
Yeah.
So at this time, you know, and after spending a full day looking after babies and boys playing football and running around, you know, by the time 5 o'clock comes, you don't really feel like tuning into what's happening in South Africa, you know. So it's very far ahead, and they're much more influenced by what's happening in Asia. But I have to say that, you know, having that time to step away from markets and do quite a bit of reading and looking at things, I'm still of the view that we're going to have a very good second half and going into 2025. You know, I think all the issues that have tackled us or have stepped, you know, have worried us, I think will slowly kind of dissipate or evaporate, even though today, you know, once again, the Fed is making a noise and services, you know, the services gauge is up and causing worries. I think that will eventually just work its way out. So, yeah, I'm happy with where we are, yeah.
Good. These things need to bed themselves down a bit. You can't go up in a straight line, then down in a straight line and expect it to stay there. There's always going to be some jostling. On that note, gentlemen, I'll address this to you, Viv. There was a recent investment conference in the Western Cape, and it was attended by, and a lot of the delivered speeches were from, you know, financial services luminaries. And there was one that I listened to on a video stream. And he came up with 3 points. He says he's just hosted a lot of people over the last month or so from overseas who were sceptical of South Africa. And when they arrived, they were downright frightened about South Africa, having heard statistics, etc. The first thing he said was, if I remember rightly, the first thing they wanted to know about was SOEs. The second thing was the economy. And the third thing was politics. And in each category of those, Viv, he pointed to statistics. For example, the economy is benefiting because Transnet is shipping more stuff now, obviously off a low base. But he went through a lot of very valid points. And he believed that when his guests left, they were not exactly beaming and smiling, but they were less frightened of South Africa. Would you agree with that? Have we reached rock bottom and we're clawing our way back?
Look, I mean, Transnet, Eskom, to a certain extent, are these short to medium-term problems that can be solved. If you had to ask me what's the real fundamental weakness in South Africa, I would point to the following fact. Out of 100 kids that start grade one, we expect about 40 of them to graduate with a matric pass in 12 years' time. What does that mean? In a country where we have unemployment rates for people under the age of 34, at, you know, basically 50%, where you have, you know, the amount of effectively taxpayers in the country, you know, this is obviously Helen Ziller's numbers, but, you know, they're pretty close to what I've seen elsewhere. 7 million taxpayers for 20 million grant recipients. That is instability. And I don't know, like, I can understand how you fix Transnet, how you fix Eskom, get a competent manager in place and it's done. You could bring in any leader you want. You could bring Barack Obama as the new president of South Africa. And what is he going to do about the backlog of unemployed youngsters in this country? What's he going to do about the school system that's failing them in South Africa? That, I think, is the real dangerous issue in South Africa.
Okay, so you would add another couple of categories to the three that I mentioned. David, I knew you're sceptic on the people that are deep value investors, okay, and they see the green shoots. There's that phrase, green shoots, from years ago. I don't think you share that optimism.
No, I'm on Viv's side. I think that structurally, over the last 30 years, the our state institutions or our country's institutions have been dismantled brick by brick. you know, to a point where they're not really effective anymore. Yes, so we bought a lot of diesel and we've improved the electricity situation at a massive cost. So, yes, a few trains are running. They've got that right. That's going to help some of the mining businesses. But it doesn't improve the long-term issues here, which Viv has said, that there's massive unemployment. These people have to be looked after.
Yeah.
And the only, you know, so you've got 7 odd million people on unemployed, and you've got 16 million employed, and those 16 million have to look after the other 7. Do the mathematics. And you don't need the degrees that Viv's got to understand what that means and the burden it puts on the working people who are already under pressure because of inflation and other issues. So I think, you know, when you get to a conference, when we have those sponsored ones, you tend to talk to the audience or you tend to talk to what the audience wants to hear. But, you just have to look at the Anglo example, and it says an enormous amount about where we are. If you start to break it down about what they want to do, what they have to do to survive, you know, if you keep going through companies one by one, just even going through results today, going through Togo Sun, to see the issues that they had to deal with because of no electricity, because of poor infrastructure, you know, what it does to common businesses. So I think there's a lot to do, you know, and I dismiss all of those so-called, optimists, unless there's really something there that you know, that's real. It's not going to happen. And I think the election is only going to delay it. You know, we'll get an ANC either with 50 or just below 50. You're going to get the same kind of people coming in with their same levels of incompetence and so on, you know, with their same thuggery, with their same thievery and so on. So I don't think much is going to change. I don't think they've got it in them to actually change. So I dismiss that.
Okay, well said. And it's a drum that you've been beating for quite a while now, and you have been right. The one thing he did say, this fellow, was that if you have a look at the number of hours or number of consecutive days without load shedding, and you look at the performance of the Rand, they're closely correlated. How long it can last, I don't know, but certainly.
I'll speak to Viv about that first, and I'll come in with an answer.
Okay,
as well.
Viv, this is your area because you've become quite scholarly on this issue.
I'm saying basically, when it comes to the load shedding issue, right, there is a conspiracy theory, and hopefully, fingers crossed, this is untrue. That what's actually happening right now in South Africa is that we are, you know, delaying maintenance, we are burning too much diesel, we are, you know, pushing things to the limit so that we can get to the end of next week effectively with no load shedding for a couple of months, with the hope that this is what causes, you know, people to forget about load shedding for a little while and therefore vote for the party in power. And then afterwards, you know, we're going to see load shedding come back with a vengeance, worse than it would have been because of all the things we've done. And I would like to point out one fact, and I think this is key. You know, historically, we've done less load shedding during winter, partly due to the fact, apparently, that, you know, these things are more efficient when the weather is colder, you know, the differential of any engine is better, or the power of any engine better if there's a colder environment it's operating in. But also, it's because Eskom, to a certain extent, understands that we need electricity more in winter than we do in summertime, and that if it doesn't do that, people will literally die because the cold will kill people, you know what I mean? And if this conspiracy theory is correct, this means that they've made a decision that people should, you know, effectively, in inverted commas, die in order to promote election priorities. That is a very, very, very damning way to think about the world, you know what I mean? And like I said, we will know in about a month's time if it's true or not. If in a month's time load shedding is still gone and everything is still fine, then, you know, great, Eskom is sorted out. If ever in a month's time we see load shedding return after not being around for a couple of months, and then we see we go into winter and we have load shedding at a higher level than we did last year, you know, some people should be answering questions about that.
Okay, Viv has given his view, David. And finally, before we leave this subject, you said you'd like to comment once he had.
I think you mentioned the Rand, and you know, the Rand is an algorithm. If the dollar weakens, the Rand strengthens. And I think more than anything, that has been the driver rather than anything happening in South Africa. It's built in, you know, in the same way those old algorithms say, if the dollar goes down, commodity prices go up. And, you know, true to form, that's what's happened. The Rand, I think, is back at 1840 now, yes, having nearly broken through 18. And why? Because the dollar strengthened, you know, on the Fed minutes and also on concerns today about the level of, you know, activity, which is going to delay cutting rates a little longer. So that's what drives the Rand. Yes, if something dramatic happens and they're right as a result of the election, the outcome, yes, you know, we will find some impact. But overall, you can almost read the Rand according to the dollar. So I think we get so carried away with headlines, you know, every time the Rand strengthens that it's got to do with Eskom. And Eskom, Lindsay, Eskom is importing diesel. Uh-huh. I mean, that's how they're keeping it. They've got turbines and they brought in expensive diesel. It's not that suddenly Eskom has decided to work harder. I understand what Viv says. You know, generally, yes, that might be associated. But this, all of a sudden, they say, no more load shedding. How come? Simply because they brought in massive amounts of diesel, which is going to somehow, how they hide it, I have no idea. How it doesn't come through the numbers, who knows? But all I say is costing an absolute fortune. So.
Yeah,
that's we'll see next week. Hey?
Yes, we will. And this time next week, when we're chatting, we might have a few results come through. I don't think they'll come through as quickly as certain other countries, but we'll have a fairly good idea with exit polls and that sort of thing. And I hope you two gentlemen are going to exercise your democratic right and get down there at 7 o'clock in the morning, first in the queue, and cast your vote.
It's right across the road for me.
There you go.
I'm very fortunate, and not only that, I'm of an age where. They come and look at your ID documents. Oh, you're really old. To the front of the queue. So I get escorted to the front of the queue.
Very nice. That makes
it's one of the privileges of being old.
That warms the cockles of my heart, so that you senior citizens are being looked after. That's very, very nice. Viv, I'm going to come to you in a moment with a certain company that came out with a certain set of results that showed a 628% increase in profits. So get yourself ready for that one. But meanwhile, Shapiro, because you mentioned Sogo Sun, and we've had Bytes, Investec, Sogo Sun, Stefanucci, all out. I don't know which one you want to choose. Yeah. You've said something about Bytes. But
I like Bytes.
Yeah.
And it was unbundled from Altron, and it's a UK-based company. And it's not. There's nothing spectacular about Bytes, but, I mean, in the South African context, here's a business that is really focused. You know, it sells Microsoft products, and it's got a stronger relationship with Microsoft. So it capitalizes on everything that Microsoft does for its customers, you know, the cloud, Azure, all the AI tools that it has and so on, and various business applications and that. So I think it's a pretty decent business that satisfies what customers need, you know, in order to digitize or transform their businesses. So it's where EOH companies like here, EOH should have been, and, you know, the various other tech businesses that were quoted, which are nothing more than service businesses. They haven't got proprietary software. So, yeah, it's a nice result. It's a pretty good result.
Okay, quick one on Investec. You know that company very well indeed. Down 4% approximately with a few minutes to go when I last looked at it anyway. The market didn't like them.
I don't know if they've looked at it. I don't know if Viv, because I don't know why. It could be because of the local operation, but, you know, I didn't find anything in the narrative, in the description and the commentary that made me scared about anything. So I don't know whether there was disappointment with the results. It's not easy to go through 46 pages of Investec talk, you know, so and establish what's really happening in the business. But the local business, I think, even in Rand terms, in pound terms, it was down, and Rand terms seemed to be pretty flat. So that might have been the source of it, but I couldn't read, you know, in the quick read that I did, there's nothing that startled me or frightened me. So
Viv,
I'm not sure why the market was down 4%. Yeah.
Viv, did you see any of these results that I reeled off a moment ago?
Not really. I mean, on the Microsoft side, I, of course, you know, I'm a AI fanatic, and Microsoft came up with a huge, basically revamp of Windows this week with Copilot.
And their new laptops that are priced around $1,000, which I don't think is bad.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. But here's the thing. It's like, this, I think, is a huge opportunity for companies that are basically, like you said, downstream of Microsoft. Yeah. Because what it's going to do is it does appear AI adds productivity. And you're going to have to revamp your entire system to handle the new kind of Windows coming through. This is in the case of going from, like, you know, Vista to the new Windows, you know, system and so on. But people are going to just be upgrading because you have to do it because of the fact that your old system is not supported anymore. And it's just, like, mostly cosmetic. I don't really think you did much more in the new one than in the old one. This is going to be an actual change in how Windows operates. And I think the amount of business that these downstream vendors are going to be getting because of it is going to be huge. So I do think that, you know, this is one of those kind of, like, secret plays on AI. It's just how these guys will make sure that your company's IT system operates properly is going to be, you know, handling it. The kind of increase they're going to be seeing is going to be spectacular.
What a world your daughter that is just chirping away in the background there is going to grow up into, Viv. And thank goodness she's got you by her side in order to guide her, which I'm sure you'll do very well. NVIDIA, Viv, I'm just going to say one thing. Do you want to say something, David, first?
Just very quickly on Sogo-san, why I want to mention it, because if you quickly go through the results, I think that identifies exactly what these businesses went, which I mentioned earlier, you know, load shedding, fuel costs, increased food prices, et cetera, which just held it back. And also, particularly in the rural areas, you know, how load shedding keeps people away from their casinos and so on. So another South African story. But anyway, I think it's far better to go on to NVIDIA.
Yes, I think it is. And Viv, the NVIDIA results, well, NVIDIA had the whole market in the palm of its hand in anticipatory, I don't know, not, what's the word I'm looking for? They were trembling with excitement, waiting for these things to come out, Viv, and their profits didn't disappoint. I don't know how much they're going to have to produce next time in order to not disappoint markets. But 628% increase in profit, I'd say that's extraordinary for such a big company.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's huge. And here's the thing. Basically, whenever you hear anybody saying they're investing in AI, basically you can imagine like 80% of that money is just going to NVIDIA. You know what I mean? If you're investing in AI, usually you're just giving money straight over to NVIDIA. So when it was Meta talks about spending like tens of billions, or Elon Musk, you know, goes and spends so much on his AI program, to a large extent, that is going towards NVIDIA's pockets, basically.
Can it do it again? Has it reached its ceiling and has to go sideways for a while? What do you think?
Not really, because remember, to a large extent, a lot of stuff we're doing right now is training these programs. So when we talk about training these new LLMs, what happens is once they are trained, they have to be run. So there's the train, then there's the inference part. And right now, though there's companies like Grok, which is not the Elon Musk one, but another Grok, is looking at things like inference, and there's other ways to do it. NVIDIA chips still remain the key, like, you know, way to do inference right now. And when you have AI systems being trained, and if they are as useful as we think they're going to be, you will have even greater demand, possibly, you know, multiples greater demand coming from inference, where people want to run these models once they are created. And so that makes the market for NVIDIA look, you know, even from these current high levels, almost unlimited.
Okay. The valuation now, I don't know what the price has done today, and I don't know what the price did in the aftermarket.
The price is 103.9. You know, they're going to split. Hey? They're splitting 10 for 1. So at the moment, it's 103.9.71. It's up 9.5% at the moment.
Is that a record
which
high?
Which is not necessarily right across the board. You know, most of the market is down on the back of concerns about, you know, higher for longer. So it's only a handful of stocks that TSM. In fact, that's hardly up. It's NVIDIA leading. NVIDIA is leading the way. It's a feature by a long way.
That's incredible.
But I was listening to Jensen Huang, and you know, he came out with the next industrial revolution. You know, has begun, and he went on to explain what AI does. I try to take notes and everything, and I'm going to have to go and kind of get transcripts and that. But, you know, when he explains it, I mean, I can't repeat it like Viv can, but I mean, the changes are massive. You know, what it does do to various industries or how they can use it is massive. And I think Viv was right. You know, you're going to have to reconstruct or reconfigure all your software and just get up to date with the latest software. If you don't, and it's probably hardware as well, if you don't, you're behind. So you can't afford to, you know, you can't afford to hang on and say, nah, I'll wait. If you wait, you're out the game.
Okay, gentlemen, let me go through some prices now. Back to the real world here, with the dollar rand being 18.46. The British pound against the rand is 23.47.
Remember, it was 18.05 overnight, eh?
What's that?
Remember, the rand was 18.05 overnight.
Yeah, yesterday. It was flirting with that 18 mark, but the stronger dollar, as you say.
18.46 is a big move.
Yeah, hawkish dollar talk, of course, that is.
Didn't mean to put you off.
No, you just can't put me off. I'm used to you. 20 British pound against the rand, 23.47. The euro rand is 19.99, partying like it's 1999 with the euro 0.4% up against the rand. The euro dollar is 108.30, and that's a euro that is 0.3% weaker against the US dollar, as the hawkish element of the FOMC had their say in the latest release of the minutes from the last meeting. Gold price, well, this is nearly $100 lower than it was a few days ago. It's 23.44, was way above 2400 at new to all-time record highs a while ago, and of course it's been knocked back by the slightest movement in the dollar affects the gold to the downside and the upside. 1.9% down. The platinum price is 0.2% weaker at 10.37, and palladium's gone back down through 1,000. It's 9.74, which is nearly 3% weaker. Let's go to the CRB index now. It's still, despite these moves in the dollar, still at close to two-year highs. Brent crude oil is 81.71. And that is 0.2% weaker. Crude oil in Texas, West Texas, is 0.4% down at 77.27. And what else have I got here? I haven't got the diesel that you were speaking of so highly, David. I've got gasoline. But, it doesn't matter where it is today because it's already been bought. Yeah, copper, of course, has been the subject of an enormous amount of buying. It has come off in the last couple of days. People got too enthusiastic. That's down 1%. The S&P 500, futures that is, 53.29, which is flat, having been up about 30 points higher than that earlier on in the day. US 10-year Treasury bond, 4.49%, and the South African 10-year is weaker. The yield is higher. It's 3.72% higher for the yield there. 10.67 is the yield on the 10-year. Bitcoin has had a bit of a day. It's down 3.5% to 67,700. Just on the Fed minutes, Viv, they are important for all companies. Nvidia, Bytes, Sogo-san, it doesn't matter who. Did you pick out anything there? When do you think the first cut's going to be?
I'm still betting it's going to be a cut because they did talk about the possibility of getting a hike. Yeah, I still think it's going to be a cut. We need to see what the numbers look like. I think the Fed really wants a cut and would need to have some extraordinary evidence to not do that. That being said, extraordinary evidence has sometimes occurred in the past couple of years. We've had some serious surprises on the upside when it comes to inflation, and there's no guarantee that won't happen again. And so, yes, I think we will have cuts by the end of the year. Possibly, you know, it was before the election, if we can get some good numbers. I think the Fed would prefer that. But don't be surprised if you get a upward surprise in inflation that basically changes all these estimates.
I'll tell you someone else who wants a cut. That is Joe Biden, the President of the United States of America. He could do with every single boost he can get. And I really fear for David, you'll know this. I don't know what the mood is about the debate in America. You've been there a lot longer than Viv and I have recently. I don't think I can watch the debate between Trump and Biden in case he makes a mistake. I feel so... Not sorry for him is a patronizing thing to say, but I just fear for his performance. He keeps on making gaffes.
Yeah, I think, well, Trump is a master at being in front of audiences. You know, he can say anything that comes out of his mouth. I don't think is prepared. I think that he's spontaneous. He's just one of those characters, and he can easily rattle people. I think Biden has held up before, but I think when you see the two, listen, there's only a few years between them, but when you see them on stage, it just seems that there's a generation. And I'm with you. I think Biden's making some ground against Trump, but I think that's simply because of the issues that Trump is facing at the moment, you know, the legal issues. I think the worries about what's happening in Manhattan, you know, he's probably could be found guilty on this case. So I think some of that is coming through and affecting him. But, I mean, that this is going to be our choice, or the choice of Americans, is just a tragedy. You know, absolute tragedy that this is what they, this is, you know, they've got to choose their president from these two candidates. I rest my case.
You do indeed. I don't know about you, Viv. I don't know how politically active you are in your thinking anyway, but I think that, and I don't understand why Anthony Blinken didn't put himself forward as a Democratic candidate. I mean, he looks like a president. He speaks like a president. He's got energy and vitality and everything. I don't know. I don't understand the system well enough. Maybe he doesn't want the job. But he would get it.
I couldn't stand against the incumbent. Once Biden said, "I'm standing," they were dead.
The problem is that it was that if Biden drops out, the only person that can effectively replace him is Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
Because she's the vice president. And so if she doesn't get to replace him, you kind of have a white male replacing a black female or a person of color female in the Democratic Party that doesn't work. That's why I have thought that the person that could actually do this was Michelle Obama. That would have been the person that could step in and do this, because, you know, she would be the person that would kind of harken back to the days of Obama, basically would be somebody that's like universally respected. There wouldn't be enough time to like put a strong case against her, because she's, you know, just a few months to go for the election. And I think she would have been able to rally the base and, you know, show up a lot of things, because one of the things that Biden's experiencing right now is the fact that, like I said, if he drops out, whoever you bring in has to have some reason why Kamala Harris is not the person. Now, you talk about Newsom, you talk about Blinken, you talk about anybody else, you have to explain to the Democratic Party, which is obviously a more female and more non-white than the general population in the U.S., why you're placing the non-white female would effectively more likely not to be a white male. And that, I think, is what the issue there is going to be. And here's a weird stat I saw recently. And this, I think, would surprise you guys as well. I mean, by any measure, as we economists know, U.S. economy is doing gangbusters, right?
Yeah.
Employment is at very low levels. We talk about growth, whatever. A recent survey found that 56% of Americans thought the U.S. was in a recession.
With the two
consecutive quarters of negative growth. How did they get to that number?
It's because of someone. It's cool because it's Trump. It's Trump saying the economy has never been worse. This has been the worst president in U.S. history. And people, if you say it long enough, there's some bloke down in Iowa or Arkansas or something who says, he's right.
But how is Trump saying this to people? Trump has no voice. I mean, think about it. On Twitter, you might hear Trump kind of proxies talk about, but Trump really isn't out there like in the mainstream media being covered in the U.S. There's something about either the reporting or about something we're missing about inflation or something, because we're talking about inflation being reasonably low. 3% is not terrible. We're talking about unemployment being, you know, below 4%. We're talking about growth rates from every number we're seeing being, you know, above trend lines in the U.S. How do people come up with the belief that there is negative growth in the U.S. There's been there for at least 6 months.
They're being fed to something from somewhere.
To go. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. You're in demand now. You're back. Thanks very much for joining us.
I'm just helping somebody else. I saw a call come through now that I forgot about.
No problem. We'll speak again next week. David Shapiro is from Sassaman Securities. Viv Govender and I will continue without him and say nasty things about him behind his back, which is always good fun. Viv, I want to have a look at the JSE. Viv, Pick and Pay was up 7.8% today. Alphamin up 6.6%. Bytes up 4.6%. Quilter up 4%. Richemont 2.6% to the good. Sogo Sun, which we've touched upon, 5.3% weaker. Cumber Iron Ore down 5.1%. Harmony down 5%. And Implats 4.6% down. Investec PLC, we also mentioned that one, 4.4% down. I think on that note, Viv, you need to dandle your daughter on a knee and give her something to eat, and we'll speak next week. Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.